So sometimes you don't get everything done in a weekend that you'd like to have gotten done. In this case, I did not solve the sound card problem. But we'll keep at it. Jesus Christ, you're kidding. Pumpkin spice spam? Save me, oh Jesus. It is the 23rd day of September 2019. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us online. Folks all are gathering in the chat room. I'm headed there now. I've had one of those long days. Our daughter had a doctor's appointment, an eye doctor's appointment, which meant that they would be dilating her pupils, which meant that she couldn't drive home. So we've been to Charleston and back today, and one of the things I was hoping to finish doing was the sound card business. I didn't get the problem solved over the weekend, not for want of trying. God almighty. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yeah, this is I want to do what we always do at the beginning of every program, and that is extend thanks to our subscribers, because it's our subscribers who knock down every bit of a fourth of our fundraising needs in any given month. So thanks to Stacy, and thanks to Bernice, and thanks to Philip in Maryland. Thank you all very, very kindly. And thanks to our friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow, partial sponsor of the program. Thank you to Tarani and Jamie and Michael. Bill in Florida, thank you to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of Southern California. Thanks to our friends at Shadow Mountain. Thanks to Joan in Tallahassee. And those are our subscribers for the 23rd, the 22nd, and the 21st of September. We have just a little bit of fundraising left to finish, and then it's fundraising free radio all the way to the end of the month. Fortunately, Gary and Gaia out in Oregon, who have recently taken up residence in some new digs, have put a kind $50 challenge on the table to finish out and do the last little bit of fundraising so that we can then enjoy fundraising free radio for the remainder of the month. So there's a $50 challenge on the table, courtesy of Gary and Gaia, and after that, we're done. If that gets met, then from that point forward, I shut up about fundraising. Okay? So hopefully that'll happen soon, and we'll have 2 hours, if not an entire program of fundraising free radio. Let's see, I did the Hi, Bob Kincaid part. Yeah, cool. Okay. Where to begin? Well, it's Moran Monday, and God knows we are Moran poor. And we'll find plenty of them. I mean, among them, of course, none other than the Second Lady of the United States. How appropriate that, well, never mind. And then later on in the program, we'll be hearing from our buddy Dan Fisher. Dan and I get together every now and then and talk a little bit of this and that, and Dan has fascinating stories from his career in the entertainment industry in both film and TV. Maybe we'll get a hint about what his latest project is. And it's also Dan's first anniversary with his new heart. So that's a big deal indeed, and I'm looking forward to hearing from him like I said, in about an hour or so. And thanks very kindly to Ralphs for jumping in on Gary and Gaia's housewarming challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. If we want to sort of talk about Morans in a kind of a reverse order, though. And I know. We'll get around to talking about Nitwit Nero and his perfect conversation. It was a perfect conversation, perfect. In which he tried to shake down the president of Ukraine. Because, you know, that happens all the time. We'll get to that. But I thought it might be nice to start with someone who actually called out some morons on her own. And in this case, I'm talking about Greta Thunberg, who got to address the UN climate meeting today. It is important enough, and it's also short enough, that if you have not seen, if you've not heard what she had to say, it is very much worth your effort, and my effort for that matter. So let's see if we can get that going. Because I don't think anybody's spoken as bluntly to the powers that be as she did. And like I said, it's not very long at all. So that makes it doubly effective. 16 years old. And called out an entire planet's worth of money-grubbing capitalists. Trying to get it queued up here.
For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight? You are failing us. But the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you.
Greta Thunberg and 15 other children have filed a complaint.
That's part of it, but that's only part of it. I'm trying to find the actual full clip.
My message is that we'll be watching you. All wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words, and yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth.
That's important. We are in the beginning of an extinction, and all you can talk about is the money and a fairy tale of eternal economic growth. What a blistering indictment she delivered of money-grubbing morons the world over. She deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. There's no doubt of that. She spoke without fear or favor and called out the problem exactly as it exists. Because the reason that we have not addressed the climate crisis in the fashion in which we should have is the money grubbers, the capitalists, the people who believe that a closed planetary system can be a source of infinite economic growth. Newsflash. It cannot. And then there's also the fact that in other disciplines, if we see unlimited runaway growth, we have a word for it. It's called cancer. And it anybody who knows anything about cancer knows that the nature of cancer is that it grows until it kills its host. We're not locked in some sort of death dance or death spiral with the oil industry. The technology has made advances by leaps and bounds. In enlightened countries, solar panels are everywhere, as are wind turbines. Some countries that are still deeply reliant on fossil fuels are doing everything in their power to get shed of those fossil fuels as soon as they can, because they understand that these are existential threats to their nations. Here in America, we talk about, some of us, acknowledging the reality of the science, realizing that, well, climate change can be the end of us all. But in the final analysis, people in oil, in hydrocarbon industries, I mean, my God, I was on the road today. I'll have to see if Agnes has a few. I noticed she was snapping some pictures. And the irony was not lost on me that on this day that this brilliant young woman, 16 years old, was delivering a Jeremiad for the ages at the United Nations Climate Summit. Well, one of the things we did is we drove past just one coal train, and it was over a mile long with open freight cars. Loaded, mounded up with coal, most likely either going to get on a boat and head to some other foreign country, or as like as not to get on to go down the rails until it stopped at a coal-fired power plant, where it would be incinerated to create electricity and to make less likely the continued existence of humanity as a going concern of a species. We're there. The scientists aren't kidding. But guess what? Along the way, Greta Thunberg, you can tell, well, I'm sure, I don't know, Al, I don't know that I'm sure. I rather doubt that Greta Thunberg has ever read Jonathan Swift. It's possible she has, I suppose. But long, long ago, Jonathan Swift wrote, you will know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's close enough not to miss the meaning. You will know a great person by these presents, that wherever he goes, he will be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces. And so too, at the tender age of 16 years, is Greta Thunberg. Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh the Dumbass. Dinesh the Why Haven't They Closed Down Dartmouth College if Dartmouth is willing to give a degree to an idiot like that? Dinesh D'Souza found an old Nazi propaganda poster that featured a rosy-cheeked, blonde-haired, in braids, German girl, and declared that it was the same thing as Greta Thunberg. Because Greta is a leftist, and so too were the Nazis. Yeah, they're still working that corner. It's still one of the dumbest corners in all of political science and history. The idea that because socialist was in the name of the Nazis, that somehow makes them the same as the Swedish social democracy into which Greta Thunberg was born and raised. Yeah, it's that stupid. Because it's Morin Monday. And then there was some other desperate for attention woman, American, of course, I'm pretty sure, whose name is Julia something. And she said she had just booked her airline tickets for her holiday with her family and felt 0% guilt and suggested that Greta Thunberg shut up and get back in school where she can learn that the climate crisis is some sort of fantasy. Yeah, really. David in South Carolina stands sent along a quote from Tim Wise. You can't have it both ways. You can't attack young folk for being self-absorbed and only concerned about makeup tutorials, celebrities, and Instagram likes, but also attack Greta Thunberg and other young people for giving a shit about the planet by saying they should just be kids. He's absolutely correct. Steve in New York noting, there are several things I can't help but think about Ms. Thunberg's words, speech, and demeanor. One, her eloquence was more than people 2, 3, 4 times her age. Two, she was able to speak with such foreign language at 16 years old. How shameful that so few, very few 16-year-old Americans, let alone any adults, could speak so eloquently in a foreign language. Three, we as a country should be ashamed of our actions on the burning of our house and our inaction at learning, and in particular, learning other languages. It wasn't lost on me either. There are very few bilingual 16-year-olds who are not bilingual by dint of necessity, perhaps having learned English as a second language after being born into a family that's speaking another one, whether it be Arabic or Spanish or French, Chinese, Mandarin. There are very few native-born American kids of anything more attenuated than, say, the second generation who can get by in a foreign country in that country's native tongue. Yeah, Randy and PA pointing out, the Nazis were so kind to the LGBT community, so they were socialist?
How dare you?
Yeah. Yeah, and Randy's being sarcastic, I understand. Got a big laugh from Kyle. Ha ha ha, Dinesh the dumbass. I laughed so hard my dog came over and asked me if I was okay. Well, you know, if the dog's talking, you might be onto something there, Kyle. I mean, it might wind up being like Michigan J. Frog, and he only talks when you're the only one listening. Darlene in Connecticut writes, that young woman, Greta, is absolutely brilliant. Apparently, she has Asperger's. The right-wing and Koch-funded trollers have been lambasting the child because of her appearance and dress. Dinesh the dumbass juxtaposed her photo next to an old photo of an Aryan girl that looks similar, trying to equate the two. Another fucker said that accidents happen with sailboats or that sailboats go missing. These individuals should be banned from whatever platform they spewed this shit through. But remember, far from being banned, they're just as likely to be rewarded. Because the people who despise Greta Thunberg are not despised by the money. Oh no, the American Petroleum Institute and all the coal companies and all the oil companies and all the frack gas companies. By God, they love people like Dinesh the dumbass. And they loathe truth tellers like Greta Thunberg. Let's go back to the audio.
The lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight? You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. But no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe.
Shades of Anne Frank there. What did Anne Frank say? I still believe that people are basically good. Greta Thunberg refuses to believe the evil of the well-meaning people who say that they get it. That passage about people who say they understand but refuse to act, there's no citation there, but the first time I heard that, and I've heard it several times today on the radio, the first time I heard that, I immediately thought, and you can go and read it for yourself and see why, I thought of the passage from Dr. King's letter from Birmingham Jail. You know the part I'm talking about, I suspect. The passage where Dr. King suggests that the Klansman and the Jim Crow racist are not the biggest impediment to progress in the struggle for civil rights. but rather the greatest impediment are the well-meaning Christians, middle-of-the-roaders, who say, well, I agree with you, but we can't do anything just quite right now. You need to wait. Because Dr. King had been told to wait until he had just about waited himself right out of a life. And she's saying something that's very much similar. If you understand, then you must act. And I think about that sort of thing all the time. Nobody can do everything. That's a question of something called capacity. And for those of us who do any sort of activism work, social justice work, environmental justice work, it is an easy pitfall to stumble into. Because you care, and you care a great deal, and because there are so many things that so urgently need your attention, you can be pulled in a million different directions at once. And every direction that pulls you is something that urgently, desperately needs to be done 2 weeks ago last Friday. To use an example, mountaintop removal. If you're heavily, deeply involved in that struggle, your heart breaks when you hear about the communities that are tormented by fracking. And then, God, you want to explode when you find out how much is being put at risk to protect a community, protect a nation from giant, filthy pipelines, as the people at Standing Rock did. But one has to draw back and recognize capacity. What you can do, what you must do, is what you can do.
Stop telling us what to do, Bob.
But you get my meaning, I trust. And so you focus where you can. And Greta Thunberg has the capacity to speak truth to power at the highest levels. Sadly, though, the people who needed to hear that truth, I suspect, were not in the room today. Because since the United States was not invited to stand up and pontificate, or who the hell is our acting UN ambassador now? I mean, Nikki Haley took a powder. She wasn't going to stick around that long after the whole Bonomo fiasco and let her entire panoply of hopes and dreams be covered in shit from staying too long at the Trump regime's party. Well, that person wasn't there. And neither was Mike Pompeo. You know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. Oh, that never ceases to tickle me. But he did. And he wasn't there. And he's one of those religious maniacs who thinks somehow, I guess, Jesus is going to appear in the clouds in his holy rolls and make all the carbon in the atmosphere, poof, just disappear. And it's going to be Frisbees and wheat checks for everybody. Yeah. Maybe at some point in time, one of those fossil fools will see and hear her words.
The popular idea of cutting our emissions in half in 10 years only gives us a 50% chance of staying below 1.5 degrees and the risk of setting up irreversible chain reactions beyond human control. 50% may be acceptable to you, but those numbers do not include tipping points, most feedback loops, additional warming hidden by toxic air pollution, or the aspects of equity and climate justice. They also rely on my generation sucking hundreds of billions of tons of your CO2 out of the air with technologies that barely exist. So a 50% risk is simply not acceptable to us, we who have to live with the consequences. How dare you pretend that this can be solved with just business as usual and some technical solutions? With today's emissions levels, that remaining CO2 budget will be entirely gone within less than 8.5 years. There will not be any solutions or plans presented in line with these figures here today, because these numbers are too uncomfortable and you are still not mature enough to tell it like it is. You are failing us. But the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you. We will not let you get away with this. Right here, right now, is where we draw the line. The world is waking up, and change is coming whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it or not. Well, that's the funny thing about science. Science doesn't care whether you like it or not. Science is what happens. Oh, by the way, going back to Dinesh the Dumbass, Brother Deacon Asa points out something salient. You can tell young Dinesh has never actually read Mein Kampf because he has no idea that an entire chapter exists in the book about the left being the enemy. Well, you know, there's none so ignorant as those who are actively disinterested in learning, and, well, if you look that up in the dictionary, there's a picture of Dinesh the Dumbass. So, is How Dare You trending yet? Did it trend today on social media? It should have. Oh, okay. Thank you, James in Illinois. The UN spokesmodel is the little blonde future ex-wife from Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. How could I forget? Meanwhile, while Greta Thunberg was delivering four of the most powerful minutes of human speech in recent memory, Nitwit Nero was leading a religious persecution summit. No shit. The guy who doesn't know the difference between two Corinthians walk into a bar, and one of them says, "Ouch!" And 2 Corinthians, the second letter of St. Paul to the church at Corinth, it was talking about religious persecution. Curiously, it was mostly Christian persecution. Ron in Raleigh says, I'm guessing Dolt 45 is fuming because Greta will probably get the Nobel Prize he believes should be his. I love Greta. She embarrassed all the clowns she goes up against. A bit ago, you mentioned solar panels on the roofs all over Europe. Remember when old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, removed the solar panels from the White House? Yeah, I do. That was one of his first official acts as president. A wet, slobbery, sloppy kiss blown to the oil industry. Ron reminds us, you'll also remember that no Democratic president put them back. That is my greatest fear. Even if Democrats win back the Senate and keep the House and win the presidency, all the crap that the Republicans have put in place will remain in place. And that is a risk, because damnatio memoriae is damn difficult to enact in any system that is vaguely even pretends toward democracy. It may be that democracy, as much as it is fetishized, may do us in. Democratic rights, and I don't mean Democratic Party, I mean little d, may be what leads us to debate ourselves into the grave of our species. Because she's right, Greta Thunberg. The money is what is ruining it for everybody. When you hear one of these denialist maggots, or just a plain old garden variety Republican, they don't all have to be maggots. But when you hear them talk about climate change, they say, yeah, but what are we going to do about the whole gosh darn dang economy? I mean, we can't wreck the economy just because the polar ice caps are melting. Actually, dumbass, no humans, no economy. Trees can fall all over the forest, but if there's nobody there to hear it, it doesn't make a sound. And so the risk that Ron and Raleigh identifies is very real. Darlene in Connecticut says, I think Greta began one speech she gave last week with, I have a dream. This child, this young woman, reads. She's a reader. Greta was on Trevor Noah's show, and she slayed everyone. He was clearly impressed with her and asked her to come back onto the show. I like how she expressed anger that her education and childhood is being interrupted because of the lack of action on the part of the adults of this world who are supposed to protect her and all children. She is right to shame the corporations and all of us. And you have to keep saying it over and over and over again until they get it, until somehow or another the light goes on. Some of them, I guess. Oh, there's the idiot. The idiot in question that I mentioned earlier is Julia Hartley-Brewer. She claims to be some sort of breakfast show presenter. She says, preferred pronoun, she, her imperial majesty. For an idiot, she thinks highly of herself. What she said earlier was, Hi, Greta. I've just booked some long-haul flights for my family to enjoy some winter sun on the beach this Christmas. Level of guilt being felt? 0%. Well, you know, sociopaths and psychopaths seldom are capable of feeling guilt. That says a hell of a lot more about Julia there than it does about Greta Thunberg. Well, very good. Very good. Via Twitter and D'Angelo. Anybody who believes in infinite growth on a finite planet is either a fool or an economist. And that is sadly true. I mean, the idea of capitalism as it was developed by Adam Smith in the late 18th century is one thing. But the fact that we persisted in it, especially in this country, long after it had become scientifically laughable, that's on us. I don't mean you and me, us, but you know what I mean. Because it is. It's scientifically laughable. That's why some nation states have moved to try to rein in its excesses and try to keep it from eating them alive. And those are the social democrat, modern liberal states of Scandinavia, Western Europe. But at all times, there are these asshats who worry more about the money than they do about the people. Note coming in from Albert. I wonder if Dope 45 talked about the Burmese Christians who are being persecuted right now. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if he did. Not at all. As Kyle points out, Greta Thunberg is amazing and she speaks from the heart. Too bad those people she was calling out will ignore it, because there's money to be made in letting the planet burn and killing us all because capitalism. But why is it that the kids are the ones who are always the more inspiring and better leaders than the so-called adults are? Parkland school shooting survivors, Sunrise Movement, etc. Well, that's because in part because they haven't been around long enough to be ground down and beaten down. They are still buoyed along by their optimism and their determination. And that's not me taking anything from them. I sometimes engage in that kind of optimism. It often, lately, it doesn't last that long, but it is, I mean, I experience it. I mean, we can get out of this situation, but we've got to start talking realistically about what it means. And as I have said 100 times over, well, maybe not that many times, we have to understand what's involved. And there's going to have to be a massive amount of behavior modification. Here, not far from me, over on the Ohio side of the Ohio River, they're getting ready to put in a new cracking plant. And the purpose of this is to make money, regardless of the ultimate outcome of the attempts to make the money. They're going, because Ohio and West Virginia are fracking for all they're worth, there's a lot of byproducts that come out of the fracking process that, you know, they're really not doing anything with. So they're going to take these byproducts, and this is going to be the second such plant in the region. They're going to take these byproducts and use them to turn them into, wait for it, plastics. More plastics. Because a dying planet, a dying species, to be more precise, has to have more plastics. Because there's not enough in the ocean yet. You can't walk on a layer of plastic all the way from San Francisco Bay to Tokyo Bay yet. There aren't enough microparticles of plastics in newborn babies. Not enough plastics at the bottom of the Mariana Trench and up near the goddamn Van Allen radiation belts above the planet. Not enough plastic. And oh, by the way, this stuff's going to emit tons of carbon and a whole lot of, you know, a laundry list of unpronounceable chemical toxins. But they're going to make money doing it. And over in Ohio, well, state government there said, well, hell yeah. We need to approve that sucker. And so some environmental groups sued, and they've entered a consent order. But the plant's still being built. And while the company says it'll monitor and it'll put up, they're going to put up a website, and they're going to tell people what kind of crap's going into the air, so that I guess they can know what it is that's poisoning them. Getting a lot of this shit backwards. Steve in New York says, we have to understand, time's running out. There really will come a time in the very near future where our efforts vis-a-vis climate change will be efforts of mitigation, not reversal. Mother Earth will get to a point where she has had enough and gets rid of us in favor of the cockroaches. Nature. Bats last. James in Illinois says, kids are idealistic. Wait till somebody starts shoveling money into their bank accounts. Or, well, and maybe not even so much that, but wait until they have to worry about no one shoveling money into their bank account. And that is not an indictment. That's not a criticism. It is baked into the capitalist system. Oh, well, a good point, Monique. Monique says, so these bastards are, as so-called adults, are nyan-yang a teenager? Isn't that called bullying? Where's little Miss Be Best? I'm sorry, I said it wrong. Be Best in all of this. Nowhere to be found, Monique, because she really doesn't care, just like her coach said. God almighty. Jack in Shreveport points out, in the past couple of appearances of this piece of human waste, as Malloy would call him, on Washington Journal, I've heard Dinesh the Dumbass be called by probably half the callers to the program an outright liar and dress him down. I don't recall the specific subject matter, but I think each was a subject in one of his books. I'll add his stupid books. At least there's some sanity getting through on that program. I had a clip, it went away somewhere, of someone actually sounding intelligent on Washington Journal, and I felt like I needed to run it, but I've lost the tab, just because it was such a seeming daggum rarity. Randy in PA observes, for a certain type of personality, fighting injustice can be invigorating until you get beaten down enough, and then you just burn out. That's why the other thing that gets talked about so much in activist circles is something called self-care. And that is, the among other things, the necessity to periodically walk away and not think about it if you can do that. And, you know, however, you know, whether you practice Tai Chi or yoga or stick a swirly straw in a fifth of rock gut tequila, whatever can turn you off for a little bit is about the only way to avoid that level of burnout. David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds us, three potential hurricane strikes are on for the East Coast right now in the Atlantic. Each of them has a chance of striking the U.S. mainland. David says, we have 1,000-year storms of biblical proportions nearly every year now. Yeah, 500-year floods every 2 years. Kyle says, to piggyback off of what Monique said, the people who make fun of liberals and everyone else needing safe spaces literally need a safe space from a soft-spoken teenager speaking the truth about science. Isn't that just the damn truth? Yeah, so let's go ahead and get this out of the way if we can. Because it was a long and busy weekend. There was the Mike Pompeo clip. He showed up on the Sunday shows to talk about Joe and Hunter Biden. When he got called out about, Princess Ivanka's Chinese trade deals, he said he didn't want to go into the details. I guess they're so used to a compliant for-profit media that he didn't expect that Jake Tapper would ask him that question. Or maybe that was just that magnificent first-in-his-class West Point brain at work. Yeah, hard to tell. But just like the Parkland kids with gun violence, the young people battling the climate crisis aren't playing. Now, 16 youth activists have filed lawsuits against a number of nations. It happened today. It was presented to the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child, and it's against France, Germany, Brazil, Argentina, and Turkey. Those countries specifically, because they are signatory to the UN Declaration, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. The United States, of course, did not sign on because, of course, the United States does not see any significant rights of a child, unless, of course, that child is unborn, and then it only has rights until it gets out of the womb. Carlos Manuel from Palau is one of the plaintiffs. Redhima Pandey from India, Ayaka Melithafa from South Africa, Alexandria Villaseñor from the U.S., and, of course, Greta Thunberg. And, again, of course, the United States and China didn't get around to ratifying the convention in regard to the rights of children to file complaints to enforce the rights embodied in the document. Devin talking about not enough plastic in the ocean to walk from San Francisco to Tokyo Bay, says, let me get it here, because it's too good. Well, it may not be thick enough to support your fat ass yet, but there's no doubt about that we have successfully laminated the whole fucking earth. There are microplastics and Roundup in the rain everywhere. Oh, the microplastics, the ultrafines. The deeper science learns to look, the more trouble we realize that we are in. I had Dan Fisher on the line for a minute, and then he disappeared. But we're right at the top of the hour, and that was when I was looking for the conversation to take place. You may recall from previous conversations that Dan is an accomplished technician and artist in the craft side of film and television production. He is also celebrating a whole year with his new heart. And so it's kind of a birthday. So I thought it would be good to have Dan on and talk a little about his first birthday. Happy first birthday, Dan.
Why, thank you, Bob. It's been a lovely birthday. Unlike my original first birthday, I did not smear cake all over my face. That did not happen. I'm saving that moment for probably like my 81st birthday, when I've got no marbles left in the jar, and I just smear things all over my face. Just
things. We'll keep it at things.
Well, delicious.
So, but was there cake?
There was cake. My lovely wife, Helene, brought me cake Friday morning. I actually stayed home from work, not because of my birthday 2.0, but because I was feeling a little bit under the weather. I had a cold and a sore throat. So, and it's been real. It's one of those things that's been going around the job. So I decided to just hang out and do my work in bed, which I know is just the worst possible way to do work, right? But I did that. And yeah, and Helene came up with those Mylar balloons and a piece of cake. I mean, what's better than that?
Chocolate? Was it chocolate?
Yeah, it was like one of those chocolate moussey things.
Ooh.
With a strip of like a chocolate bar, like the on top.
Oh, I know the ones. It's like a broken hunk or little slabette, sort of triangular, and it's kind of stuck in the cake, that kind of thing.
Oh, totally. Welcome, by the way, to the dessert hour. We will be taking your calls about crullers and donuts after we discuss cake.
Crullers.
So, yes, but more importantly, it's a new year for me. And a year has passed without me dying since I received this heart. So that's good. That's one down. And listen, these days, you know, for anybody who might have to undergo the procedure of a transplant of any sort, or have a loved one that might have to do this, a lot of people are scared naturally going into it, especially like a heart, which if it stops and doesn't start again soon, you know, life could it's possible does not continue. There's a fear of death, but things are just, you know, so great now in terms of what medicine can do, and it's continuing to learn how to do that. You know, the odds of surviving a heart transplant or liver transplant or someday a brain transplant, it just gets better and better every year. So that's another reason to celebrate a year. So every year that I'm alive, I get to see the advance of science and of medicine for people who are not me and I care about more than myself. I care about it, anybody that's, that goes through any, you know, any medical malady. Certainly, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, you were so brave or so this or that, I wasn't brave at all. I had to endure this because I had no other choice, and I had wonderful doctors. And then the people that have things like cancer or whatever, that's just mind-blowing to me that anybody would go through that.
Hey, Dan, let me just interrupt for a moment. I'm not sure what kind of, are you just on your Apple laptop or?
Yeah, is it not coming in well?
I don't know if, honestly, I don't know if it's on your end or my end, but I'm having a rough time with the audio.
Oh, well, that's no good. Is this any better if I kind of hold it to my mouth? Or?
Yeah, it actually got a little bit better.
Okay, if it still sounds crappy, let me know, and I'm on earphones right now. I'm just trying to eliminate, you know, the room tone.
Oh, no, don't worry about the room tone. That may be it. The ear, if you're using the Apple, you know...
Take it off.
Okay.
How are we now?
You're a little roomier, but that's okay.
Okay, and I'll put it closer to my mouth. I want the full experience for our listeners out there to get to actually enjoy this and make this as not as self-indulgent as possible. But anyway, so heart transplants, I recommend them. I mean, not if you don't need it. It's not like Botox. Don't get one if you don't need one. But if you do, it's a wonderful thing. I'm guessing now my heart might be 26 years old, because it was 25 last year when I got this thing. But I have a heart that's half of my age, and I'm hoping to do my part to take care of it so that it continues to last and do good things for me.
So it's been a little while since we talked. I mean, you've been back with nose to the grindstone, putting your heart into your work. You were moving along nicely. I mean, you're taking your great big mountain of pills every day, but you're going to work every day too, right?
Going to work every day. I get up at 4:45. Uh-oh, this is poor connection. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. I get up every morning at 4:45 a.m., and I do the commute into Queens, and I help run what's called a set dressing shop, which is where all the furnishing and things like carpets or hardware and doors and all the sort of curtains, all of that stuff come into us. And I make sure that things go to where they should, which sets.
So you're not working on a specific show right now?
I am. As usual, I have to be careful of how much I describe.
Right. Standard disclaimers apply.
But it is it's a show for Apple TV. It is a science fiction show, and it's the largest budget show right now on Apple TV. And so because of that, it's just everything's big. It's a very big show.
Is it still in production, or has it hasn't aired yet?
It will start shooting in about 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
We're just getting set up for this thing, but we have big sets. We have space stations, a space shuttle. We've got, and then your standard living rooms and houses and things like that, some of which will be on studio sets, built sets inside of a studio out in Long Island, and then others will be going into real life houses. And we've got scenes that take place out of New York, across the country. We've got a cornfield in Oklahoma that we'll be reproducing somewhere in upstate New York. And so that's all of the stuff that I'm part of the team that just keeps track of making sure that everything goes to where it's supposed to go, and the tools and the hardware and the equipment that we need to do our jobs in a various amount of locations will be everybody will have what they need to do their jobs correctly, and not losing things.
We have a very strong science fiction leaning here among the community. So as soon as the news of it goes live, I'm sure we'll all be sitting around here eagerly waiting the first installment.
Good, I hope so. I mean, it's for Apple TV, which I think is launching soon. For all I know, it's launched. there's so many streaming networks now, I can't keep track of them all, but I'm grateful for it because it's so busy in New York. It's really like San Francisco during the Gold Rush years. If any of your listeners out there have any inkling of wanting to work in the film or television business, now is the time to go ahead and take that chance, come to New York. And you start out on the bottom, but you'd be amazed how quickly you can rise, because there's just such a need for people, for crews. We have shows that are starting up that don't have enough basic crew people.
Is that unusual, that level of activity? I mean, generally, I guess we tend to think of TV.
It's been unusual for a while, just because it continues to grow and grow, the demand and the need for streaming content, as it were. But we have to make this, we have to fill the hours that people are demanding to be entertained. And you've probably said it and heard it yourself. There's now, there's too many things, too many good things on quote-unquote television now. There's too many good things to watch. You can't keep track of it all. Every day I've got somebody recommending, oh, you've got to watch this series. It's the best thing ever. And I'm sure they're right, but I wouldn't be able to go to work and do anything if all I did was watch the shows that people recommended I watch. So, how are you, by the way, since we haven't talked and everything, how are you doing and how is your family?
It's been, it has been a while since we talked. For the most part, it was a busy front end of the summer, and then it felt like the back end of the summer. I just didn't get anything done that I wanted to. As I told the community a month or so back, had to go out and find a new used automobile. The other one got totaled, and that was an unlooked for crisis, but we're trying to get through it. Didn't have a car payment, got one now. Welcome to
We had that situation about a year ago where we actually had one car too many, and then in the course of about 3 weeks we had one car too few. We went from three to one in the course of a few weeks, but we got through it, and you will too. I have faith in you, Bob.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But
should we get back to talking about either show business or saving the world, or both at the same time?
It's interesting you would put it that way, because I saw some of the – I didn't sit down and just watch it, but I saw some of the Emmy speeches last night, and it looks like there are people in the industry who get the little statuettes who actually think that they can do both.
And I think can do both. I actually think it's very important to, I think it's important to realize that we can do both with what we do. I referred to what I help produce as content, but that content is very potent stuff. And we can get into that.
Dare we call it art?
It is art. It's also a reflection of life and where our minds are right now. And for all the thing of like, well, everybody in Hollywood's liberal and da 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 da. I mean, honestly, I think that's greatly true. It's not that there are no Republicans or are no MAGAs in Hollywood. I know, for instance, like Bruce Willis is a Republican, and there are other and
John Voight,
yeah. And then in country music, there are a lot of self-professed Republicans and so forth, and I'm not knocking that at all. But what I do think is that this medium we have is extremely powerful, and we do have a certain responsibility to consider how we use it. There are so many shows, and there are so many streaming services, and there are so many YouTube videos and so forth. There's so many ways now to either be entertained or get information or to get opinion, that it can be a very mind-boggling thing. I think in terms of entertainment, a lot of people look at a show, like a television show or a movie, as, well, I just want to turn off my brain and be entertained, quote-unquote. But, even within that, it makes a difference of how we make that entertainment. If we're making a show about superheroes and all the superheroes happen to be white and all the superheroes or the majority of the superheroes happen to be men, but maybe there's like one woman who relies on her sexuality to as her powers or et cetera, then we're sending messages left and right, whether we intend to or not. And we're also telling the viewers who are not of that majority, you aren't as important as this target audience of white people of a certain age and so forth. Or if we have a romantic movie, a romantic comedy, and it's only gorgeous people from the ages of 18 to 28, then we're saying to older people like myself, we really don't want to see people like you kissing or showing any kinds of affection to one another, because that's gross. You know, we want to see sterling, beautiful, sculpted bodies. And listen, I like to see that too. I don't know if I necessarily want to see flabby guts hanging out and so forth.
That reminds me. There was a film eons back now. It was one of his last, in which Burgess Meredith did a nude scene. And
was that
obviously it made an impression on me, and not in a good way. Do you happen to recall? I mean, was
you ever see a Mice and Men by the way, Burgess Meredith with George and that?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hey, would you like to see me take off my pants? That's my bad Burgess Meredith impression. was that one of the Grumpy Old Men movies? Because I know he was in that too. Because his whole thing was to just say dick jokes throughout the Grumpy Old Men series. Was he naked in that too?
Oh, I can't. I can't play. That's the reason I asked. I can't place the film. I only know that I have several scarred synapses as a result of it.
Well, I mean, I guess that comes to what I was kind of whining about a second ago. It's like I wouldn't mind seeing affection between older characters in a movie. I mean, not necessarily Burgess Meredith nude or whatever. But it is important for like overweight people to occasionally see somebody that looks like them on screen, that's, they're not portrayed for ridicule, or maybe that there is a possibility that there's somebody out for them who doesn't find them gross to look at or whatever. It would be nice for gay characters in a sitcom to be affectionate to one another and not just simply sassy and intrusive. It would be nice for women to be portrayed as smart and capable. I mean, there's all that thing now, like when there are female leads, where they're always described as, well, she's really smart and independent. You know, she's really tough, and you know, it's like, okay, but what do you mean by that? It can't just be like every once in a while a woman punches somebody. It's like, would it kill somebody like the scientist to be a woman? You know, or would it? Or whatever. I just think that representation is important.
Oh, I think that we're seeing some of that now in terms of character development.
And listen, I think we're seeing
casting.
I think we're seeing the benefits of at least one generation of representation now. For black women, for instance. I mean, we've now had, you know, a generation of young women who've grown up seeing Oprah become Oprah and Michelle Obama, who's not an entertainer, but is certainly in the media enough. There's and you know, Beyonce, whatever. It's not just been about the occasional black act. You know, the one token black actress.
No, it's not. It's not a one off anymore.
It's not a one off. It's not that we just. Oh, we already have our one. Yeah, exactly. Our standard. You know, black chick who gets the girlfriend of somebody. That's all you get. I think there have been models for a generation now, and I think we're seeing the benefits in terms of society. I do see that. I do believe that black women are coming of age in a way in our society now, in my lifetime, that you're seeing more educational levels. You're seeing more doctors and doctoral candidates. You're seeing more professionals, and I think the glass ceiling is being chipped away. And I do think that Hollywood and what we see on television and on our computers makes a difference in that. I think gay marriage became more acceptable when it was on TV with not only Will and Grace, but Modern Family. When you had that gay couple on Modern Family, who were, you know, who were married, were they married on the show, or they were just, you know, married by, you know,
I can't recall, but you know what you're talking about is the is what Joseph Campbell described as the power of myth. Our myth, our myth making establishes our subsequent realities.
Right, right. And well, and also just when, you know, I know when I was a little kid, I saw Batman on television and I said, I want to grow up to be Batman. Or when I saw Dr. Doolittle with Rex Harrison in 1967, I said to my folks, I want to be a veterinarian. And because as far as I knew, what veterinarians did was hang around with talking animals all day. Now, you know, that dream faded very quickly for me. I have no intention of being a veterinarian and would be a very poor one if I ever had attempted it. But yeah, it has a very strong influence on us to ignite dreams. You know, so many people want to be athletes or rock stars or musicians, entertainers. You know, we see and movie stars because they're like our royalty, and we see them on TV, and it really looks cool, and we know that a lot of them are millionaires. And so that's a basic goal for a lot of young people, and some people outgrow it, some people don't. But, and I think all Roma, you know, why aren't there more cops on TV that are, well, I think there are now. What am I saying? I think everything's getting better. On a cop show, it's not necessarily the guy that looks like Mike Connors or Telly Savalas. Now it can be a guy that looks like Samuel L. Jackson or a woman. It can be anybody. Yeah. I really think this. I want to see. I don't know if there's a gay cop show yet. There should be. And it doesn't mean that like half the show is about them rolling around in bed with another guy. It should just be a matter of fact thing.
Yeah.
You know, I got to go to the husband tonight. Oh, he's giving me problems. You know, whatever.
There's probably something like that in the works now because of the proliferation of content that you described earlier. Was there anything at the Emmys that stood out for you?
Right, honestly, Mr. Show Business did not watch the Emmys last night. I just read.
I know you're religious about the Oscars. I didn't know.
I am religious about the Oscars. I've gotten I had to get up at 4:45. And I just and I had kind of a big day with the son in Brooklyn, celebrating the birthday with the wife and the son. So I just decided, you know what? I don't have any skin in the game this year. I'll just read about it tomorrow. I'd worked on The Americans for a couple of years, so of course I was going to watch that to see how we did and that. But now there's a lot of shows that were nominated that I liked. You know, I was really glad that Fleabag got the attention that it did. And I've really enjoyed Game of Thrones. I don't think this year it deserved to win, but I knew it would, because especially when it's your last year, that's when you tend to get the awards. But you watched it, so what? I was really glad the kids.
No, I cheated. I only watched clips.
Oh, okay. But I was really glad the kid from When They See Us won. Did you see that? Have you watched When They See Us on Netflix?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean it's. A sock in the gut. You've got four days of getting your guts off, but you know you come out of it grateful that you watched it. And the children in that show, and especially the guy that won the Emmy. I mean, he goes from playing a child to playing a man. And
well, you know, our mutual friend Tracy turned me on to Pose. And
I have seen Pose yet. I don't know why. I just again, there's so many good things to watch. Yeah, shame on me for not watching.
Billy Porter winning was a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I haven't talked about trans people. There's so many people I can talk about to say, well, this group has been ignored, or this group has just been, you know, considered.
Well, what happens next is one of the brilliant trans actors on that program has got to get nominated, because there's some amazing work being done.
Uh-huh.
And every, you know, like I've said before, ever since our conversation started and you told us a little bit about what you do, I have watched with a more nuanced eye at all the set decorating and the hand props and the, and I forget what it was I was watching. there's a little series, and it's on Netflix. They're not very long at all, maybe 15, 20-minute pieces. It's a series called Bonding. And and just because it has it, it's this terribly, terribly otherwise normal young woman who is working her way through graduate school in psychology or and by night she's a dominatrix. And she recruits her gay guy best friend from home to serve as her minion, I guess. And it's dark, and it's it's funny as hell. And just the but as Agnes and I were watching it, just the idea of, because at one point in time I looked and said, "Yeah, the set decorator had a blast with this."
Oh yeah, I'll have to watch that. You mean, what do you mean by that? The set decorator had a blast.
Well, I mean, there's ropes and chains and, you know, lots of interesting things that have probably never appeared in that much profusion in one television program before.
You know, I was prop master for the first season of the show Girls, the Lena Dunham show.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of sexual content in that show. And more than once, my job was to go out. I'd go out at night on my way home from work. And I'd stop off. We have a local place in Rockland County called Romantic Depot. And it's your local place to stop by. And if you need a dildo or a nice rubber suit and a large, I mean, I don't know. I haven't been in there in a long time. There used to be a large collection of DVDs of, you know, just to suit any.
Every
any
kink fitness on the planet.
But I don't even know if DVDs, you know, porno DVDs even exist anymore for sale. But Romantic Depot's still, I passed by and it's still doing business. So I guess people still have a need for, you know, for that. But anyway, when I did Girls, I would have to often stop and I'd have to buy a dildo, right? I had to buy a strap-on one time.
Wait, you know, if we just excerpted that little segment right there, the way you put it, when I did Girls, sometimes I would stop and buy a dildo, sometimes even a strap-on. That's poetry, Dan.
Well, and plus, if you remove the quotation marks or italicization of the word girls, it really makes me come off as kind of like a pig, you know, doing girls with dildos and strap-ons. But I meant when I was the prop master of the television show Girls.
Yes.
I would have to occasionally purchase dildos or other sexual devices. And the one time I had to buy a strap-on because there was a scene with Adam Driver before he was famous and Star Wars guy and everything. This was his first big break, this show. And there's a scene where he's doing something very sexual with Lena. And, you know, a lot of times when you do those scenes, actors are faking it all. I mean, pretty much all the time, they're faking it in one way or another. They're thrusting their hips, but they've got on like a little, what they call a cock sock or something like that. And I think they had one for Adam, but at the same time, I think Lena's character had her hand on his genitals. And so she wanted something that she could really put her fingers on that wouldn't be Adam's actual genitals. You know, this is touchy stuff. Or not, that's no pun intended. So I went out and I bought for Adam Driver a strap-on dildo. And so he put on the cock sock. Then on top of that, he wore the strap-on dildo, and we framed it so you didn't see the strap-on part as he's doing his thing, and she is grabbing it and touching it, but it's not him. But it almost is, but it isn't. So, and this was the kind of stuff I would occasionally do for that show, is stop off at the Romantic Depot to buy stuff. And I always was curious to see if I would run into somebody I knew. Like, I was really relishing the idea. Because I could at least say, well, this is for my work, you know, whereas if I ran into like my kid's, you know, science teacher or something, it's like, try to explain that, you know, not that there should be any shame in publicly buying.
Yeah, but in a store like that, if you say this is for my work, the standard refrain is, yeah, sure it is, buddy.
Yeah, I know. but it was. And if I were to buy such things for my own pleasure or somebody else's pleasure, that's my business, and it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Because America,
and you know, sexuality is healthy and enjoyable, and as long as as long as there's consent and so forth, hey, you know, don't mind if you do.
Well, exactly. So,
speaking of dildos, when are we going to start talking about Trump?
Oddly enough, here, hang on. You get a cowbell for that.
Well, I didn't want to come on tonight and just talk show business. You know, I think that
Oddly enough, I was about to say the same thing. Okay, we've done everything. We've just got to stop ignoring the moron elephant in the room. Yeah.
Well, and I have to confess, I haven't listened to your show in a while. So I don't know if this is done to death or not. You know, I mean, God knows, you know, when I go to one of a number of news sites, for me, the first question pops in my head is, what did he do now? You know, what did he say now? That's really it. And the headlines rarely fail me in that regard. There's always
right, because,
some
because this
thing.
Is the reality show presidency.
Yep. Well, and he's gotten the presidency he really wants now. You know, he really has gotten rid of anybody that could tell him no. And now it's all yes men, including his attorney general. And it is mostly men, except for good old Kellyanne has managed to stay clinging to the raft. But he's got all these people now that just basically let Trump be Trump. And so it's really that monarchical president that he's always dreamed of having. He's got it now, and he doesn't even have a Congress that's willing to stand up for him. But thank God for us that his imagination is still pretty limited. It's all about what he can do for himself. We still manage to wake up every morning, you know, without isotopes floating around our heads. So, you know, thank goodness for that. But anyway,
does he scare you though?
He does scare me, of course, because he is unstable, and this is not news to you or any of your listeners. He has been unstable, but he's gone beyond that. He can't speak in sentences. He loses in a standard paragraph. He loses verbs. He loses basic nouns. You know, to say nothing of a stream of thought. Now, granted, you and I tend to go on all kinds of tangents, but we generally come back around to some sort of cogent idea. But he's really lost a lot of that. I keep waiting for him to just one day like proclaim a horse a senator, you know, Caligula style.
Incitatus.
I'd be totally serious about it. Yeah.
Yeah, the horse's name is Incitatus.
And so I believe this. Not in jest, but in sincerity, is my way of saying, hell yeah. I mean, that person has nuclear codes. And do I think behind the scenes that more than once somebody said, no, Mr. President, it's not a good idea to send out the nukes? I'm sure it's happened a lot. But what I do worry is that little by little, those people have either been fired or they've just quit because they couldn't take it.
Well, the community here is pretty well plugged in and absorbs and consumes a lot of information, a lot of news. So when I get a chance to chat with you, it's sort of a rarity insofar as, and I mean, you know, I love you dearly, so I mean no disrespect by this. You're kind of my man on the street barometer.
Uh-huh.
And so, you live in ostensibly liberal New York.
Ostensibly, yeah, primarily.
Where do you come down on impeachment?
I think now it's a necessity, and I've dragged my heels about it. I'll be honest. But out of political consideration, I've thought that maybe it's not a good look for us, or especially coming so soon after the Mueller thing. It just, you know, I had thought at one time it's just gasoline to the fire. But now I think, especially with him saying, well, yeah, I called up, you know, I got in touch with foreign nationals and have pressured them, you know, Ukraine to try to blackmail Biden and influence our election. I mean, for him to say, well, so what, is beyond, you know, he doesn't even attempt to deny it. You can't just say, well, it's not politically expedient to follow the Constitution. You know, he's been ignoring the Constitution for most of his presidency, but it's been extremely blatant the past year or so, I think, when he's really tested the limits, and Congress has really allowed him to test the limits, where, you know, you had that farce of the subcommittee last week with, what's his name, the
Lewandowski,
the former, yeah, where he just said, I'm not going to answer your questions, and whatever I tell you is probably a lie. What are you going to do about it? And they're like, well, I don't know. Try not to do that. You know, there's no pressure whatsoever to tell the truth. There's no pressure whatsoever to follow the.
Well, that's one. You know, that's one of the things that I think this presidency has done, Dan, is to show us the fault lines and the flaws in a system that we thought was sort of toddling along and working, not great, but well enough. And the fact that findings of contempt, and, you know, the Intel Committee, their judiciary, I'm sorry, Judiciary Committee, you know, they may vote out some a contempt citation on Lewandowski, because if anybody deserved it, by God, he did. And then it becomes mm-hmm. A referral to William Barr, and it just right. sits there. Because, of course, William Barr should be he should be in contempt as well. This entire administration is contemptible.
Yeah, you're out of order. I'm out of order. The whole system is out of order. It's true, and it's being allowed. And nobody, I mean, for as ever left wing or right wing previous presidents throughout history have been. You know, there's always been a gentleman's agreement, as it were, between presidents. If we're going to follow standard procedures to some degree, we may point it in different directions or for different purposes, but we're all going to agree that if Congress calls you, or one of your staff or ex-staff before a subcommittee, they're supposed to testify, or if they don't, as in the case of the Watergate hearings, they can go to jail, and we will make them go to jail. We will make them. We will punish them for not cooperating, because we believe that Congress is an equal branch of the government. You know, the whole triangulation of it. And now it's not that at all. It really is to serve the king, and to protect the king. And that's how Trump looks at it. He looks at the attorney general as his own consigliere. His attorney to represent him, which was not the role at all of the attorney general. I don't have to tell you that. But, you know, man on the street stuff, I mean, my feet are in two different streets. You know, my one foot is mostly in the New York area, has been for some time. But I do pay attention to where I came from, which is West Virginia, which is an entirely different street altogether. And so I just find it very, very... I find it, it's a poor choice of words on my part. I find it odd that two groups of people can look at the same object, the same facts, and come away with such extremely different conclusions. And I don't mean to both sides this. I guess what I'm saying is that I still don't quite understand how we've managed to get to a statement is not really a statement. The president said this, but he didn't really. I mean, they used to say that with Reagan. Well, the president said this, but what he really meant is this. But it's really gone past that, where you have the president say something, and the next day he said, I never said that. It's like, well, yeah, we've got the tape. It's right here. And he's like, oh, that's fake. It's been faked. Or I didn't mean that. And then, of course, you have the representatives come out there and interpret, and give the spin and interpretation on it. Now, that's been traditional. I mean, every every president has his own spin and interpretation. But now it's really the thing of, well, I didn't do this thing that everybody saw me do. And I didn't say this thing that we all, that you can quote back to me what I said. Truth is no longer truth, it's opinion. Science is opinion. Law is opinion. It's all opinion. News is opinion now. News is just, no, it's not really a statement of what, when, where, and why. It's mostly analysis. And I will both sides that one. You go to a news site, and you know, we all go to news sites, I think, now for reinforcement of our beliefs through whatever facts we can gain on the news.
Yeah, the term for that is confirmation bias.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll admit to it. I'm not going to go to Fox News for my news, and more often than not, I will click on the thing that looks interesting to me if it's critical of the president. Because I so detest him, I want to find out what else I should know that's detestable. It draws me in. I sometimes feel slimy and sticky and wrong about it, but it draws me in. I admit it. Same as I admit to going into, you know, sex stores and buying dildos. I'll admit.
Strictly for work, though. Strictly for work, yes.
Strictly for work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I ask you about these things because, like I said, when you're immersed in it up to your chin, some things seem obvious that I suspect probably aren't. Let me just has all of this made you or encouraged you to go and enhance your civic knowledge at all? I mean, have you gone and read the impeachment clause of the Constitution or anything like that?
What I've been doing now more, Bob, is I'm reading more history books. This is the thing. I'm going to come across like Sarah Palin right now. You're going to ask me what books I've read, and I'm going to say all of them. But I have been reading. One thing that sort of caught my attention was online, so many people, when it came to the immigration arguments, people would say, well, my grandparents came here legally, and it's always with all caps, right?
Right. Yeah.
Legally, you know, and they came here. And what I notice sometimes is that people say, well, my great-great-grandparents came here in 18-whatever, and they went through Ellis Island like they were supposed to. And so, wait a minute, Ellis Island didn't open up till 1892. So I think you might have created this in your head. I think a lot of things that we think are actually just stories we've been told enough that it's become true. So I wanted to learn more about immigration process and how immigration evolved from before America was the United States of America. It was just the colony, colonization, and how, you know, it was really just a big land grab at first, and even when Ellis Island open. And so what's the difference in immigration laws now than, for instance, when Grandpa, you know, whatever, came from Sicily? What did he have to do when he got off the boat in 1912 versus what does somebody have to do now? It's far more complex and it's far more selective. So this idea that we can say, well, if they just came here legally like my grandpa, it was completely different method then. You can't care about it at all. And not everybody came through Ellis Island. See, this is, again, where I think the movies in Hollywood come to influence beliefs. I do believe that a lot of people remember the scenes in Godfather 2 of young Guido coming through Ellis Island, and they imagine that's just what it's always been. And they even imagine their own grandparents in that sort of nice cinematography and lush music moment, carrying that one suitcase with the hat on their head, and that's how they imagine their own grandparents. And whether or not that's true, they don't really know. Speaking of movies, something else occurred to me today, by the way. I'm going to shift gears slightly. You know, we were talking about Trump, and I don't think Trump has probably ever seen Citizen Kane, and I don't think he's ever read The Great Gatsby, but I think in some ways he really is both of those characters. I think, like like Charles Foster Kane, he thought that he could buy love and respect and admiration. And when he couldn't buy it, he would try to, he would run for office, and that would prove that the people loved him. And when Trump somehow won this election, I really believe he thought that, that with that office came instant respect from the majority of people. I think when he has said things like, most people love me, or most people, everybody says I should get the Nobel Prize, or most people are for the wall, I think he really in his head has convinced himself that's true. In his head, I think that he believes himself loved and respected, and everybody just comes up to him and calls him sir. Sir.
Right, and anybody who doesn't is obviously wrong and hates him because they're horrible people.
Well, they're Hillary lovers. Anybody that says, you notice that often it comes to, James Comey was a Hillary lover, or Robert Mueller was a Hillary fan. He uses that a lot. But I also think he's like, and he's similar, and he's like Jay Gatsby. He wants something he'll never have. He never really will have the level of love and respect he thinks he did.
Well, so that goes, that's part of his, that's part of his origin story, really. Because, the Trumps were jumped up money.
Uh-huh.
His entire decision to move out of Queens and start, trying to make a splash in Manhattan had everything to do with the fact that he wanted to be as revered as a classic Manhattan socialite and Manhattan money,
mm-hmm.
instead of just another slumlord from another borough, because that's what his dad was, in addition to being a.
You see, I'm.
In addition to being a member of the Klan, he was also a scummy slumlord who got busted by the federal government for being a racist.
Yep. Yeah. You see, I moved here in '86, and when I came here in New York, I lived in New York City, and Trump was in the newspapers even then. But it was all like as he, because he was going to clubs all the time and he was hanging out with models and he was promoting himself even then as a sort of playboy tycoon who put his name in big gold letters on all the buildings and things like that.
Really quite the Jay Gatsby approach, isn't it?
It really is. He's Jay Gatsby. He's a combination of Jay Gatsby and Charles Foster Kane. And
none of the good and none of the good aspects of either.
Yeah, and like both of those stories, it ends pretty much tragically. Neither man really gets what he wants. Trump doesn't even want a really nice sled out of the deal. But he's not going to get he will never get the respect he desires. Every time he's visited the Queen of England, I think he always expects that he will automatically be treated with respect. And you can just see the disdain she has for him. It's just palpable. And some of the other leaders, many of the other leaders of the world, they can't stand him. They let him walk alone. They're all walking in, like 9-file, and there's Trump walking by himself or in a golf cart. He's not going to get in with the popular kids. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, he shambles more than walks now. Do you think? You've mentioned the fact that he loses entire chunks of ideas. Do you think he's all home?
No, he's not.
And let me preface that. You gave the short answer in another one of our conversations once upon a time. You mentioned the fact that you've done therapy for years. I think it's beneficial. In many ways, I think the 20th century rise of therapy is a delayed response to what happened to the priest penitent relationship during the Protestant Reformation. And I know that's kind of deepish.
I'm trying to digest it. I'm chewing. Yeah. Okay, but anyway, go ahead.
So you've probably you're well familiar with the process, the introspection, the work. If he's not there, how long has he not been there?
Well, in a certain way, another person you could, you, in a way, I'm going to go crazy here for a second. Another person that you could compare him to is Michael Jackson, in that he, like Michael Jackson, he did not have a normal childhood. From the time Trump was born, and it's like royalty, it's like any prince or princess, it's not unnatural that he sees himself in somewhat in monarchical terms, because unlike the, you know, rags to riches story that he tries to sell of himself, you know, the small loan of $1 million, he really was given $500 million by his father to start out. So with $500 million, you can do a lot of stuff.
Including lose it.
But I think from the time he was born, all throughout his childhood, he was never told no to anything. And I think even in school, even with his teachers, I think there was probably a certain amount of kid glove treatment because he was a rich kid. And even in the private schools, in the military school, it's obvious that there was not a real strong, true sense of discipline to him. You know, he's always gone for the easy way of things. And he could, you know, because he has so much money.
And if you, let me ask, if this is becoming more and more something that of which I've become convinced, if he didn't have that much to work with in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We went through
you
this.
You mean an election?
Yeah. We went through this the other night, and I think the modern psychiatric term is that he has an intellectual disability. If he didn't have much to work with in the first place, wealth will cover a lot of that up, won't it, in a place like New York?
Oh, sure. But most wealthy people don't live such a public life, and certainly there was no less a public life than that of the President of the United States. I think that is the least private existence in the world, is to be the President of the United States. And that's what he has now. He has scrutiny, which he never imagined. I think that when he came into the office, I think he thought that it would be that they would be throwing roses at his feet, that there would be a level of respect and adulation that is due to the position.
And which had eluded him all his life.
Yes, yes. And he was able to get by with that because his money could buy girlfriends and company, and people that could constantly tell him, oh, very good, Donald, you're the best, you're wonderful, that's a great idea, oh, you know, don't worry about the bankruptcy, that's we'll write it all off, and you'll actually make money on the bankruptcy, you know, we know these tricks because we're, you know, accountants. And again, like Michael Jackson, I think it just, Michael grew up with a very distorted view of what life was for everybody who was not Michael Jackson. And you want to call that narcissism or, you know, a narcissistic complex? We tend to say that word narcissism only in the negative term, right? Oh, he's such a narcissist. He thinks he's so great. I think in some ways narcissism is a disease. I think it's a horrible thing to be only living for yourself and only concerned about your needs. So a complete lack of empathy
you're missing out on about 50% of the human experience, at least.
Yeah, there's no chance for development, no chance for growth, no chance for real, genuine love. I don't know. I don't know the guy personally, but you know, am I right to say that he's never loved anybody but himself? Sure, comes off that way, but I don't know what goes behind closed doors. To quote Charlie Rich in 1973.
Let me dredge up another character, film buffs that we are. One evening on the program, I played that pivotal courtroom scene from the Caine Mutiny.
Strawberries.
I fooled them with the strawberries.
Strawberries. Yes.
There's that level of paranoia.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, again, there's only so much I know of his life prior to not only the presidency, but prior to the reality show stuff. But as a business person, a very prominent business person in New York City, you know, I got to see every once in a while in the headlines that Trump did this or did that. I mean, he publicized himself a lot on like on page six of the New York Post. And some of the things he did in New York City for a time actually seemed pretty good. He took over the rebuilding of the ice rink in Rockefeller Center in the late 80s and got it done ahead of schedule and under budget. At least that's what we read in the papers. Before all we know, like everything else Trump says or supposedly does, that was completely false. But anyway, he was, you know, somewhere along the way, when he was doing business, he was able to be public and yet private. We didn't know, we only knew the marriages and the models and the Studio 54, but we didn't know really what was going on in the boardroom and in the real deal making. I never read The Art of a Deal, but I know he didn't write it anyway. He ghost wrote it. He had a ghostwriter. But President Trump and even reality TV Trump, that's just a whole different beast. And I think it's very damaging. I mean, we've seen all kinds of people go crazy when they become celebrities. You know, when you know, Lindsay Lohan at one time was a very talented, sane, young actress. Michael Jackson was this normal, cute kid at one point. But not everybody can handle this level of fame and of notoriety and everything, especially now in the age of the multimedia and the internet. Everything you do and say is recorded, and I don't think he was ever prepared for this.
Well, down another rabbit hole. In your long and storied history, in show business, have you ever had occasion to work professional wrestling?
No, the closest I came was actually working on the movie The Wrestler, where we had professional wrestling bouts. While we were making the movie, when we were doing the wrestling parts with Mickey Rourke, we had professional wrestlers come in and put on shows in between the stuff we filmed to keep the audience engaged. But no, I've never worked for WWE. They're up in Connecticut and they're a different union than mine. So and I've never been part of that world.
Well, the reason I ask is because you mentioned, you know, reality TV, The Apprentice, all of that. It's one of my theses with regard to him that, yeah, okay, reality TV, it shaped him to some, but much of what you see in his behavior is not
you're fired
of some, you know, tawdry little reality program, but rather the over the top braggadocio and pomposity that attends professional wrestling, because that is where he got his start.
Yeah, and it's that style. You're absolutely right. It's the WWE villain, the guy that comes in to the ring, and even if people are booing, he's like, thank you, you know, I appreciate your adoration, I am the greatest, I'm going to kick this guy's ass, etc., etc. It is that approach to, unfortunately, to world politics and to everything. That, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a role, and it's an appealing role. You know, one of the things that I do know people who are MAGAs, you know, but people in my union, which is a whole other thing, who are like, you know, Trump, you know, he's done great things, more than anybody since Lincoln. And what it really often comes down to is this identity with him, men. Like, he's not a pussy. That's really it, you know. Obama was such a pussy. He caved to everything. You know, Trump stands up and he's a man and he's tough and he doesn't take crap and all this stuff. Even though what's happening before our eyes is the exact opposite, capitulating to Saudi oil barons who killed journalists and financed 9/11, never forget. But to them, he's not a pussy because he acts like a WWE villain. That makes him not, and forgive me for this use of the word pussy, I don't.
I understand you're using it as a reflection of the attitudes of the people you're describing.
I hope that's interpreted or agreed upon by your audience. And if anybody doesn't feel that way, I understand that too. Words repeated can be hurtful, even if used in a context. I get that. But it's these people I know, they identify with the guy. They think he's just like them. And you can do the bone spurs jokes, and you can do all this other stuff. It doesn't matter. But they're gonna stick by the man through thick and thin. They're in this deep. They're not turning around. Which brings me around too to this whole question I've asked in the past with you. You know, a thing that I've contemplated, and I think we all contemplate, is as the election draws closer and closer, like, how do we deal with these people, the base? How do we deal with the base? And what I really believe now is just forget about them. Leave them by the side of the road to rot.
Yep. Are you going to argue with them? I mean, if you're into fruitless, pointless wastes of the precious finite time of your life, go for it.
But you really enjoy whatabouts, that's the place to go.
Well, let me.
This is what I do believe, though, is instead of trying to be all earnest and counter with facts, and here's a link and all that stuff, because they're just going to link shit back. Oh, here's from the Washington Times, which is a right-wing rag, you know, but it looks distinguished because it has the word Washington, right? But my belief is the best way to deal with MAGAs and to deal with this president is to make fun of them. And not in the way they do of libtards and all that, dumbocrats, but take their words, take the batshit crazy things they say and just point a mirror at it and just send it right back to them like, oh, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, I don't know. This is not humor at all, but, you know, basically say in a joke form, you're absolutely right. I must have missed the day that Mexico paid for the wall. Or, you know, oh, yeah, you know, since Obama's been president, you know, there has been no racism. Whatever. If you can put it in the form of a joke, especially if you can throw their own words back at them, you don't have to go down rabbit holes. You just drop the mic. You make fun of them. You drop the mic. You move on. And if they feel they've won because of a war of attrition, well, they can just be the king of their own mom's basement for the day. You know, just walk away. But, you know, we know that nothing is more effective for president to counter President Trump than to make fun of him. Because he does want respect. He does want love.
Well, there are those who say that he was finally convinced to make an earnest run for the presidency after the withering scorn that Obama heaped on him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah, and you see that footage, and he's just sitting there like, you motherfucker, I'm going to get you. He's thinking that the whole time. And he really did kind of get him. I'm gonna counter everything you ever did right. Just to prove that I'm, you know, just to get back at you, I'm gonna take away health insurance. But I sometimes think about those debates with him and Hillary, and like when he did that creepy thing of standing behind her. Remember that?
Oh yeah, the stalking.
The stalking thing. She was a piss poor candidate in many ways, and one of them was that she really should have just turned around and what are you doing? You know, if she just acknowledged that this is crazy behavior, what are you doing? Like, you want me doing that to you? Don't even go into, like, you want me to do that to you. Just, you know that we're grown-ups here, right? This is not how grown-up, you know, what are you, a world, a WWE wrestler? You know, or when you say, such a nasty woman. You know, if she would have had a few good zingers ready to go, I think that could have made a huge difference. But she's, you know, and this is where I think Warren might have some more capability of that.
Well, now you've opened the next door that I was heading toward.
Yeah, I think she's. I'm extremely impressed by her. She is my choice. Sorry, Bernie supporters. I'll still vote for him if he's nominated. I don't think he's going to be nominated, and I think she's the clear choice to me.
Well, to use the vernacular of where I came from, if if the nominee is an old yaller dog, I will be voting old yaller dog 20.
Well, she's not that much younger than either Biden or Bernie. But look at her, man. I mean, she's out there like, if she has aches and pains from this stuff, she's not showing. She's hustling for however old ass throughout this campaign. She's worked it. You know, there's none of that entitled feeling from Hillary. This is not Hillary 2.0. There's no sense of entitlement here at all. And, you know, and she's being very patient. And in every debate, she's making it clear. She's not evading. She's daring to be a wonk, but not in a dull way. I think she kind of comes off like your high school, the cool high school English teacher who's like 3 years from the
class. I've seen her speak in a room, and that was exactly what I came away with. She was the teacher that you loved. Who always wanted to make sure that you got it and did everything in her power to make sure she explained it in such a way that you would get it.
And look, it's superficial to praise her for things like standing in line for selfies. But you know what? That counts. In public perception, you know, that counts. To be like, you can stand in line and if you wait long enough, she will take a selfie with you. And she'll wait an extra hour for you to get to the front of the line so you can get your selfie moment with her. I think that's important. It's, you know, it is trying to do that, well, she's Hillary 2.0. No, she isn't, because Hillary wouldn't really do that. You know, there's an approachability that she's, you know, again, whether or not she's any of those things, if it's all surface and image, she's working the image really well. You know, it's not just the policy wonk stuff. It's all that other stuff. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if like she starts singing Lizzo songs or something, you know, she's really, you know, catch on with the kids kind of thing. She's just, I think she's
Well, let me ask you this. And I mean, I try not to trash any of the candidates, and that's not my point here. I have yet to find any of those, gosh, Bernie is the, not Bernie, I'm so sorry. Gosh, Joe Biden is the bee's knees. He's neato keen. I can't imagine anybody carrying the nomination but him. Oh, my golly, I'm all in for Joe. I have yet to meet any of those people.
Yep.
And I'm not, and again, granted, Dan, I'm in a bubble here, and our community, you know, you got a lot of Bernie supporters yet in the community. You got some Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
And I think we've been pretty successful getting across the idea that, you know, Trump is the problem. Having your perfect candidate is not the problem. Trump is the problem. He is a symptom to a much larger disease. And we got to have somebody who wants to address the disease. So with that in mind, though, I didn't think I was going to get a, I got to have Biden out of you, but why not?
Well, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, at least the last time I saw them about 4 to 6 weeks ago, were very much in the Biden is the obvious choice because he's the most electable, you know, and they're just scared. Everybody, and I understand it. Nobody wants 4 more years of this. And so it seemed, I think, especially at that time, that maybe that is the sane, safe choice. You know, will America be ready for somebody that espouses Medicare for all? Or, you know, can Trump do damage to that? Can they get pigeonholed into, you know, the socialism trap and all of that stuff? But, you know, a couple of things have happened since then. You know, I thought that Warren's quote about, well, if we're not willing to, you know, just... If we're not willing to stand for what we believe, they're just going to call us socialists anyways. You might as well stand for what you believe. I thought that was strong. And Biden has just shown he's not a strong candidate. And if he's wilting in the presence of Kamala Harris or Warren, how is he going to take on the Trump machine? And Trump has, you know, is extremely flawed, but he still knows how to get publicity. He still knows how to send out the whoppers. And you've got to be able to handle that. And you can't just go, well, I wasn't prepared. You've got to be prepared for that stuff. And I wanted to be for Biden. I wanted I wanted to be a stronger supporter than I've turned out to be, because everything, as time goes on, I get less and less impressed. And I'm not even sure why he's running, other than he thought it was his fait accompli. But that's why Hillary ran, right? And it didn't do her any good.
I've taken some grief for this, not so much in the community, but online. I know it's very not done to say that you worry about his age. I worry about his age.
You talking
Biden?
Or Biden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I see him doing and look, a presidential campaign is not easy. Sure, got that. Absolutely.
But he's not learning from his mistakes. He just keeps making mistakes. You know, what was it, just last week, where he was at a symposium for, I think, LGBTQ rights, and it was a woman who was moderating, and at some point he calls her sweetheart. You don't do that in 2019.
Nope.
It's not 2008 anymore. It's a different time. You've got to pay
attention. Importantly, I think it's not 19. It, you know, it ain't Mad Men. It's not 1960.
Yeah, but even in 2008, you could get away with that. But that was 11 years ago. You know, it wasn't even the 60s. It was in 2008 where, you know, 2007 where people were like, is America really ready for a black president? It's not that long.
And it's also in addition to time, it's also place. There's a big difference between somebody who walks up to you in the restaurant and says, "You want the peach pie or the coconut cream pie, honey?" Although they don't talk like that in Iowa.
Listen, I will never call a woman who is serving me food in a restaurant, honey or sweetheart, unless no, I don't think I ever will. Period. It's you know, unless she's my wife or my daughter, you know, it's not my place. She's not my sweetheart. I mean, you can be kind to people.
No, that's what I'm saying. If the server walks up to you and says, "You want dessert, darling?" I mean, that still happens in parts of this country.
Yeah, but it's also different. It's a different
dynamic.
It's a totally different dynamic. And yeah, there are rabbit holes here about, well, we're men, and, you know, if a woman calls us, what's the difference? Da, 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 da. All I know is this, that not that long ago, I was in a restaurant with my wife, and the waiter, the serving person, called my wife honey. And she didn't flip out on him, but she told him very to the point, and matter of fact, I don't like being called honey. I'm not your honey. I'm a customer, and you don't call my husband honey. So please don't call me that. It's 2019. It's time to move on. And he was dumbstruck. And she wasn't wrong. I mean, I would never have the guts to have done that.
Not looking for any particulars.
She endured her whole life being condescended to and talked down to and harassed, as most women are.
Right.
So I get it.
Was that New York?
Yes, it was. Well, it was suburban New York. It was our little place that we go to all the time, and
yeah, no details necessary. I didn't know if you'd maybe road trip down to West Virginia, because, you know,
we've not road tripped to West Virginia in a long time. Christmas we might, but even that, it probably won't be West Virginia, Pittsburgh, because I don't have so much family in West Virginia anymore. Everybody's either died or moved. But it's true.
We've they call Florida God's waiting room. I guess it's just because there aren't so many of us here. But I think West Virginia is the oldest or the second oldest population in the United States, something like that.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, because people stay, right? People stay there. There's, you know, people love it there. And you know, I have a lot of people I love who think there's no better place to live. And that's their home, and they should be proud of it. Any place you live and you choose to be, you should take pride in your home. It's not where I choose to live, and I'm not saying that to be critical of it. I've met plenty of West Virginians who've said to me to my face, well, you couldn't make me live in New York if you paid me. Now, that's rather insulting to me because nobody's paying me to live here. I like living here. And I would not say to a fellow West Virginian, well, you couldn't pay me to live there. But it's just not my choice. But people do stay. And you retire, and, you know, there's fewer, cheaper places to live. I've joked with my wife a couple of times, like, maybe when I retire, we ought to just live there because I can buy, like, a fantastic house for $100,000.
Buy a freaking mansion for two.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But you would miss right now, you would miss civilization. That's my shorthand for it.
I live 35 miles away from New York City. I can't tell you the last time I went to a museum. Been a long time. I've not been to the Statue of Liberty or Empire State Building in a long time. You know, I'm not going out to Broadway shows and, you know, dancing the tango every weekend. That's for certain. I live like pretty much anybody else does. You know, honey, what do you want to watch tonight? You know, I do a lot of that. Or, hey, I'm going to finally get around to this book that I keep intending to read but get distracted by Facebook. That's my life a lot of it.
As far as Facebook is concerned, now that Movies I Have Loved is over, any further plans, or are you still working on the book?
Well, you haven't seen, I guess. Maybe you haven't been on. I started a new series that's not every day. It's Mondays and Thursdays. It's called Rankin. And it's a little easier for me to maintain than the Movies I Have Loved, which required me to write a 350 to 600 word essay every day for 200 straight days.
That's great discipline, though.
Yeah, but it's kind of crazy. But this one is a little simpler, and it's also more involving of other people. I come up with a list of stuff. Like today the topic was spies and agents, secret agents. So you had, of course, James Bond. But I also had Secret Squirrel, Get Smart, and Emma Peel, and Jack Bauer from 24, and Jason Bourne. And people just say, what are they like? What's their favorite spy? And last Thursday was Power Ballads of the 80s. So, you know, is it Open Arms? I Want to Know What Love Is. Every Rose Has Its Thorn. What was the one?
Oh, I got to start paying attention again. I've been on kind of... I post the program on Facebook and stuff, but I haven't been spending a lot of time there. But this is a decent reason for me to.
Well, that's all right. Again, I haven't listened to your show in a while, so
yeah. So take that.
We're both sorry. We're both really sorry, and just because mommy and daddy fight doesn't mean they don't love each other.
Right. And if you're gonna, I have to play the since you mentioned the spy one. Our Man Flint.
I didn't put that one on there. I mean, you know, that's it. I try to limit it to, like, anywhere from 9 to 12 to 16, usually, at the most. And you could go on all kinds of, you know, I got all kinds of things. And that's the fun of it, actually. The reason I did this, too, instead of doing essays all the time, to do this thing, it's more participatory. I just give you, like, 9 or 12 or 16 choices. Favorite Beatles song or, you know, coming up in the future will be... I'll have a thing of diner stuff you'd find on a diner menu. What do you like out of that? You know, do you go for the pie, the coffee?
This just sounds delightful.
I think it's going to be fun. And again, it's not every day. It's going to be Monday and Thursday, twice a week. And I went ahead and wrote 50 of them, and I created little Photoshop graphics for each of them. So they're all stored up now. So all I have to do when I'm at work, I don't have to do anything other than cut and paste, put them in there. But it does create a community conversation about silly things. You know, what Motown songs do you like? Or, you know, what cartoon theme song do you think is better? You know, the Flintstones or the Jetsons or Johnny Quest or, you know, Animaniacs. I try to make them.
Oh, diverse. How I love the Animaniacs theme song.
I try to make them diverse so that it's not all white people and also not all reflective of white culture. So that, and it's not all men. There are, you know, even with the spies, there's Emma Peel, There's Kerry Russell's character from The Americans.
Yeah.
There's at least a few of everything. There's going to be one with villains, and I'm going to have Nurse Ratched, and I'm going to have Annie Wilkes from Misery going up against Darth Vader and everything. So
I mean, does Sauron count? He's just a graphic. He's just an eye.
But that's the thing too. What amazes me is how many I didn't think of. You know, I'll put 16, and I'll think, God, that's a lot. And then people are like, how could you not have put Mission Impossible with your favorite spies? You know, it's how could I not have done that? But, you know, I did today. I didn't include Mission Impossible at first. I had to give it as a little bonus. So anyway, the point is, again, for 5 minutes out of a day, we can all get together and talk about something that has nothing to do with. We can save the world most of the day. We can argue with each other for most of the day. But for 5-10 minutes during your coffee break, you look it over, you chip in whether or not you like, you know, REO Speedwagon's I Can't Fight This Feeling Anymore, any more than you do Brian Adams' Heaven. Or Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie.
What is this talent you have for naming things that immediately in my mind, maybe it's just because it's two old white guys sitting around rapping, that I Can't Fight This Feeling makes me climb trees. Jesus, God Almighty, help me. I've got a short list of songs I despise. And that's in the top five. Just because...
You'll be relieved. You'll be relieved. Come to think of it, I took that out of the list and I put in... what is it? And I meant every word I said. When I said... I love you. I meant that I love you forever. And I'm going to keep on loving you. That's what I put in, Keep On Loving You by REO. Because that was 1980, so it qualified.
Well, now you've
but
got...
What do you hate about
it? It's the rhyme scheme. It's so fifth grade. I know,
you
I'm being
dead. Never bled. Instead, you lay still in the grass, all coiled up and hissing. That's coiled up and hissing rhymes with listen, and I can't keep on loving you.
Okay, wait a minute.
So it's cheesy, but that's the thing too. Stuff like that sometimes, you know, I don't like that song really myself. I didn't like it in 1980. But yet it sticks, you know, and I still remember listening to REO Speed. High Infidelity on 8-track. On some friend of mine had it on 8-track, and we would drive around the hometown, and on 8-track in the middle of Keep On Loving You during the guitar solo, it goes from track 1 to track 2.
And you can still we've talked about that on this program, and not with you, but you can still hear the click click on the 8-track, right?
Oh yeah. Same with Frampton Comes Alive. In the middle of Do You Feel Like We Do, it goes from 3 to 4, just in the middle of the song. It's like, hold on, everybody, give me a second. Okay, now.
Yeah, the Eagles' Greatest Hits. I'm trying to remember which song it is, but that's another one. When I hear it, my brain will insert the channel change. Yeah.
But, you know, the stuff sticks, and the stuff, for whatever reason, has meaning. And in my case, part of it is it's just a way of keeping track of the years, because the years are fleeting and the years go away. You know, I've lived this life, and so much of it I don't even remember anymore at all. But if I go back, if I listen to a song, I can remember some aspect of it. You know, I do know.
Yeah, those are triggers. Those are triggers in a good sense.
Yeah, I do know that for junior prom, our theme was Sail Away, as in come sail away, come sail away, come sail away with me. I'll always remember that, and I'll have an image of the tinsel on the wall of the gym. You know, I'll always remember junior prom because of that. And my date, Charlanne Morris, eventually married my best friend, David Graham. So there is that, too. In a good way. I'm glad they married.
Yeah.
I'm not jealous in the least.
No, I was going to say, it sounds like a beautiful thing.
No, it was wonderful. Dave was my very first friend ever, because our fathers were friends. So when I was born, I had an instant friend. And then I knew Charlanne. I met her at a camp, and Dave went to that camp, so he met her. And I went to prom with Charlanne because I didn't have a date. And then kind of hooked them up a little bit. Now they've been married for as long as I have. They've got a kid in college. So,
hey, speaking of kids in college, how are yours?
Great. My son Gus is in grad school now. He's at City University of New York's School of Journalism, and he is working on his master's in video journalism and documentary film.
I thought I remembered documentary film in that mix somewhere.
Yeah, he's always had skill as a filmmaker, especially an editor. But he's never had enthusiasm for this film that I've had enthusiasm for. The phony baloney, Hollywood show business, entertainment stuff, it's never really appealed to him. But when he was at McGill, especially, I think he became really more politically aware. And he realized that he could use his filmmaking skills to educate and enlighten and bring out what has been hidden. And I believe that's where he's going to go with this. And my daughter Phoebe is still in McGill. She's in her second year, and she is majoring in history with a degree in sociology. And she's also very politically minded. And where she's at now, because, you know, we've thought for a long time, she likes politics, so maybe she'll go into politics and be a politician or maybe a behind-the-scenes person. What she wants to do is get involved in museum and educational reform. And that is, you know, so much of what we think of as history is actually not true. You know, we've created myths about what America is or how America was formed or how the world was formed. And so the idea for her is to keep working on making what actually is real history taught, for better or worse, warts and all. And that, in a way, can make us understand what America is, what the world is, and what other countries' cultures are about, and so that maybe we as Americans can get our heads out of our collective nationalist asses and pay attention a little bit to what the rest of the world does. And to put this kind of approach into museums and how they are presented, and also into schoolwork and books and
there are a number of members of this little community who, when they hear that, will begin shouting and clapping.
Well, good. Yeah, I'm proud of both my kids, and I shout and clap myself. You know, I'm on your side. I don't know if you've already done this, but, you know, Tracy Porter has become a friend of mine through,
yes,
Facebook and her devotion to your show. I'm going to give a congratulations. She's just been doing marvelous stuff.
Oh, yeah, she's just amazing.
Yeah, she's been posting, you know, her journey of trying to get into shape, you know, and to having a physically active life and losing weight and getting her body to where it wants to be. And she's up to now. She's up to now what, like 3 miles a day of like,
yeah, walk. Did another 5K this past weekend.
And I forget how many pounds she's lost.
Like 38.
It's over 38. So good for you, Tracy. We're paying attention and we're proud. And it's not easy doing this as publicly as you're doing it. You really took a risk, you know, by putting it out there so we all could see it. You know, you really kind of painted yourself in the corner that, you know, you kind of had to succeed, you know, and I salute your bravery, and I'm very proud of you, and I'm very impressed that you have done this, and you're an inspiration for me. I am trying to you know, part of my thing as a recovering heart patient is to exercise as much as possible, put that heart to work, and I've gotten better with it. I can go further. And I'll try to always look to examples like yours to spur me on to go further. If you can do it, why can't I? Why can't any of us? You know, you've got more moxie and more, but maybe you don't. Maybe we're all lazier than you. But anyway, thank you for being an inspiration, and congratulations to you, Tracy.
That is a lovely tribute, Dan. I think it's wonderful that you took a moment to do that, because What Tracy has done has been an inspiration to a lot of us.
Mm.
And
it's brave as hell, man.
Yeah, and not least of all me. I mean, I can promise you, I am not going to go out on one of my local roads and you know, run with the coal trucks. I'm better off going to Pamplona and running with the bulls, believe me. But it makes me want to do more and see if I can't be a little bit better.
Right. I bought one of those little step unit things. Remember how like the step craze was really big? I've kind of gotten into that. I bought the thing. I've used it more than once. I've had some lazy periods, but then I've had some not lazy periods. So the goal is to keep diminishing the lazy periods. So that, you know, I do it every day or 5 days out of seven instead of two or three. But I've got it. It's in my room. It looks at me. I've even taken it to work because you can just put it in the car and you know, on my lunch break, I can, you know, do 10 minutes of step work. Why not? So that's been fun.
And by the way, we sort of breezed past it. You know, you mentioned you had a cough or whatever, but your total clean bill of health these days?
Well, I think so. I have an appointment tomorrow morning with the cardiologist. After, you know, I had this whole series of tests about 2 weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, I had a whole battery of tests, and I've just been waiting for the results to come back and also for my doctor to have time, because she is a world-renowned cardiologist who literally flies all over the world to do her work. And we have an appointment tomorrow, and we are going to go over what all of these tests tell me in terms of my progress after a year has passed. And I had an echocardiogram on my way home from work today, and we'll look at that. And the upshot will be, do I have to take a mountain of pills? Can it now be a molehill? And one of the side, you know, there are side effects to all medications. In my case, I get trembly hands sometimes from some of them. And I'd like to not have that. So it'd be great if I was told, oh, you know, the prednisone can go down to, you know, one every 12 hours instead of three. So,
oh, yeah. What a party prednisone is.
Yeah. But, you know, whatever it takes, man. If that's what I have to do, and if I have to have trembly hands,
does the prednisone drive you? Does it increase your appetite?
I'm told it does, which is like when I felt especially guilty one time for having gained some weight, and I confessed that to my nurse practitioner, and she said, "Oh, well, you know that it increases your appetite, right?" I'm like, "No, I didn't know that one." So okay, I can forgive myself a little bit, but on the other hand, I do have to get on the step.
But for the most part, I mean, everything else is
everything is
groovy.
Fine. Yeah, everything's
wonderful.
Fine. I have, you know, a little cold here and there, and I guess I've been healthier in a lot of ways than I've been in a long, long, long time.
Well, I know, and, you know, it was a brutally hot summer. Did you handle the heat okay?
Well, I just had to stay in a lot more than I would like to. But I'm also I have vitiligo, which is just skin thing that Michael Jackson had, where some of my skin tans and some just stays pale, and then so when I go out in the sun, it especially shows up. I get really blotchy. But also some of my medications, I'm not supposed to have exposure to sun, or at least I have to just, you know, slather the sunscreen on myself with a trowel. So that tends to discourage. Oh, I'm just going to run outside and, you know, kick a ball around or something. It takes more planning.
And most of your work is indoors.
Yeah, but I mean, even when I'm not working, if it's really hot or really sunny, I'm staying inside. And so that's the thing. How do I not be just sitting on my can for large portions of the day? And you have this little tempting drug called Facebook or CNN or .com or whatever, and it's very easy to sit on your can. And I am on this, you know, I'm still working on the next draft of the novel. It's very easy to just not move. And the trick is move as much as you can. You know, that's why I was, one of the reasons I was brought back here, is to move and be. You know, the more I move, the better off I'll be.
Kurt Vonnegut said, I think we were put here to fart around and dance.
And Vonnegut is one of my patron saints, him and Harpo Marx.
So, by the way, how's Dan's mom?
Wow, we're going to discuss. Well, my mom's great. You know, my mom is my mom. She's going to be 80.
I mean, we've talked about her during every conversation.
I guess so. She's doing swell. You know, she's very healthy and very, as they say, sharp as a tack. And I don't know. I like her. I like my mom. And I call her every 2 weeks we talk on the phone, something like that, every couple of weeks. Yeah, I try to spread it around. You know, one weekend I called one of the sisters, I called a mom. Try to call somebody. Every weekend you should call somebody. I mean, that's the thing, too, with the heart stuff. You know, it really makes you go like, hey, you know what? Call somebody because you should do that. You know, it makes me a little more aware of the use of my time and things like, oh, people were really, really, really considerate to you when you were down and out, you know, when you weren't doing well. So you should be considerate to them. And, you know, it doesn't take anything to call somebody. But you know, my mom also has finally adapted to texting. And it's great, you know, because texting is just so casual. You know, you can just do it anytime. It's like when you call your mom, you know, I don't know about you, but when I call my mom, it's kind of like I know I'm in for at least 45 minutes. And you got to go over the subject, right? You go through there's like the list you always go through. And I'm not saying I don't enjoy it. But it is a little, like, I know that I'm going to be talking about how's Helene doing, how's Gus and Phoebe doing, and I'm going to hear about my nephew, Max, and all the things he does. I want to hear these things. But I like also just being able to text my mom sometimes, like, hey, did you read that story? Wasn't that stupid? Or did you see that show? You know, just not as crucial.
Yeah, before I even knew that this conversation was going to take place, And you mentioned Tracy a couple of minutes ago. I triggered something right up next door to a full conniption on Tracy's part by bringing up an anti-vaxxer story out of California last week. And there, you know, and now that I say this because you said, "Hey, Mom, you might want to read the New York Times anti-vaxxer piece."
Do I want to read this, or is it going to raise my blood pressure?
Hey, well, I'd read it when I was really, really mellow, because it drives me crazy that we can't, we seem so powerless against such manifest ignorance. And
we're in an age now where science is opinion, right?
Right. That's a prime example of it. You know,
just Trump.
Yeah, I mean, the whole country is the dude saying, well, that's like just your opinion, man.
That's right. It used to be at one time we had a collective sort of understanding of common acceptance. And granted, some of those common acceptances were not good things, but there were good things, too, that we sort of collectively agreed upon. And now it's the wild, wild west out there in terms of information is concerned.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, really basic level stuff. There used to be a sort of general agreement that it was good to have streetlights at night or paved roads or the trash gets picked up every week or the water isn't poisoned.
I mean, for God's sake, we're arguing about light bulbs now and whether or not slavery was bad. I mean, how can we come? How did we get to this point?
I don't know if you caught it last week or so, but a judge in Richmond.
Sources of energy is somehow a terrible thing.
Right. What's wrong? Are we really that worried about the well-being of billionaires? Because if we transition to renewable energy, the only people who are really going to be impacted by that, and they're not going to be that impacted, is, you know, fossil fuel billionaires.
Yep.
And their shareholders.
And the shareholders. And, yeah. And
so
it's not
in
coal miners. It has zero to do with coal miners. You know, it's look at, you could give all those coal miners really great jobs if you really invested in solar farming and wind farms and take all those lovely mountains and hills and put stuff on them that create energy versus blowing them up and getting all the crap in your water supplies, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. So let me ask you, because you do live in civilization, do you have much in the
so
way?
So do you.
We drove to Charleston today and back.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned toward the front end of the program, we drove past a mile-long coal train. We drove past mm-hmm. three separate great mountains of processed coal, one sitting on a rail line, another one sitting, another two sitting by the rivers. And do you know how many solar panels I saw in that same 50-mile stretch?
Zero.
Zero. So that...
Listen, I hate coal. It's just that it's a fading market, and what I love is the idea that the people I went to high school with and their children can have jobs in something that will be sustainable into the future and help create a future. And that is not coal. It just is not. The market does not want it, and it's decreasing to the point of obsolescence, whereas sustainable energy is something that can create jobs, can be an industry.
So that was one of my questions. Do you see solar panels up where there in your suburban world?
Oh, hell yeah. It was really great the other day. Last week I was working, I was over at our production office, and I look out, you know, it's in Brooklyn, and I look out and there's rooftops all out. I can see rooftops out the window, and all of the rooftops that I could see within my limited scope were all completely covered in solar panels. You know, somebody made that investment,
right?
And it's gonna, you know, and it pays off. And it's also just a matter of being conscious of, you know, let's start doing something, not only because of its jobs, but because, you know, it's the right thing to do. You know, just the same as, you know, as recycling. It's just common sense. It's a right thing to do. You know, to not just treat the planet as a garbage can is the right thing to do. And if you're a Christian, that should be basic to you, that God gave you a gift. And he even says in the Bible, it's your job to tend to your gift. It's a job to tend to the earth and to take care of it. And so if you're not, and you're going, well, you know, jobs, you know, let's just do what it takes. Let's just blast a mountaintop off and we don't need clean drinking water. You're not doing your job. You know, whether or not you believe in God, we should be the tenders of it. And we're all, you know, more, to some degree or another, better at it than others. Some of us are more hypocritical. We believe, but we don't do. But we can all at least start with the idea of believing and acknowledging that we've got to do better at this, and we can. And there should be no argument against using more efficient light bulbs. There's no sensible argument.
Who's apart from the president of the United States, who's out there saying, I don't like light bulbs that last 7 years?
Well,
this guy's a genius businessman. He really wants to be replacing light bulbs in all of his trashy bedbug ridden properties?
I think it's the thing, too, of like, you know, you're not going to tell me whether or not I can buy, what kind of light bulbs to buy.
Goddamn, you know? Freedom! Well, freedom!
But, you know, we did at one point or other decide that maybe leaded gasoline was not such a great idea. And it just phased out. And we're all used to the idea now of all of our gas being unleaded, whether it's premium,
regular or super double enhanced, and it probably all comes from the same tank for all I know. Food is more expensive. But, you know, we're used to that. We got used to recycling, and it really didn't take that much to get used to recycling or unleaded gas. But there's no resistance now by certain segments of our population about, you know, well, I'm not going to drive an electric car. You know, there are states that are passing laws against electric cars. It's crazy, you know?
Where electric cars are concerned, Dan, there's a great opportunity for a little bit of low comedy or high comedy, depending on how you look at it. One of the problems that comes with electric cars, apparently, is the fact that they're so damn quiet. So a problem has developed insofar as pedestrians are getting hit because they never hear the car.
Because maybe it's like what they do with gas that comes out of your stove, where they give it like a little smell so that you know whether or not your gas is leaking. Maybe it's something like that, like a little occasional ping, ping, ping or something. Just to kind of...
You're on the right track. What they're going to do is use sound effects.
Mm.
And
like
I
what?
Just...
What are the sound effects?
I just got to thinking how much that could be, how much fun that could be, if, for instance, and it's only for when the car is like at 20 miles an hour or less.
Uh-huh.
If you could customize your own electric car warning sound, like Daffy Duck going woohoo, woohoo, woohoo,
yeah,
or Woody Woodpecker, yeah. There's great comic potential out there.
Good evening. I'm about to hit you with my car, you know, something like that. And that would sell a lot more cars. People would buy electric cars just to hear, just to be able to program in, like, their favorite Kardashian saying, you know, here I come. You know, they would do that. People would buy cars that had a Kardashian warning them to slow down or something.
Or you know, for the hard ass maggots out there, Clint Eastwood saying, "Go ahead, make my day."
Exactly. Oh, who wouldn't? I'd buy an electric car just to have a Clint Eastwood car. I want a Clint Eastwood car. That's what we want.
When you get to it, this needs to be. Go look up the story, Dan. When you get a space in Rankin, come up with a list of what I want my electric car to sound like.
You know, we all know a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. I mean, you know, Lucky Charms are great, but when you get the marshmallows that look like rainbows and stuff, that's even better. You know, Cap'n Crunch was wonderful. Throwing crunch berries, even better. You know,
I'm still traumatized. My first box of crunch berries, I ate all the crunch berries and wouldn't touch the Captain Crunch. And I was starting.
Well, let's wash it down with orange juice. Of course, you're going to get the painful mouth when you try to do that.
Well, there's that too, but it was the simple fact that I had no interest in Captain Crunch. I never understood. Why didn't they just make a box of Crunch Berry cereal?
I think they did that later on.
Well, after it was too damn late.
Yeah, after you became a grown up and had to start having fiber in your diet.
Yeah, grape nuts and shredded wheat and bran and things.
Yeah.
By the way, you got a fan note in from Brother Deacon Asa up in Vancouver. I could listen to y'all tete-a-tete all day, every day, twice on Sunday. Dan's a beautiful conversation, even though he doesn't have class enough to like Breaking Bad.
I love Breaking Bad. Who said I didn't like Breaking Bad? That's a filthy, dirty lie. I'm offended.
Ooh. Brother Deacon Asa has stuck one foot in the bucket.
No, I don't. I love Breaking Bad. B, I don't care if you you can say whatever you want to me. You're in Vancouver. We're going to meet.
Well, no, somewhere along the, no, Asa is kind of encyclopedic. Somewhere along the way, he's picked up the idea that you had some sort of animus against Breaking Bad.
No, not at all. I might have, maybe in a past thing, it's not my number one show of all time. It's probably in the top 10 for dramas, but Sopranos is still my number one of all time favorite drama.
Where does The Wire fit on that list?
Wire could be two or three, maybe. But there is no Breaking Bad without Sopranos. It's sort of like, do you like Chuck Berry or Beatles or whatever? You know, there is no one without the other. Sopranos just, to me, started it all and revolutionized television as we know it. There is no streaming, everything is great now on Netflix because without The Sopranos, I think. Yeah, no, Breaking Bad, terrific. I've seen it. I've watched the entire thing like three times, I think, so far. I've seen The Wire probably two or three times, but Sopranos I've seen like seven or eight times all the way through. That's my jam, as the kids say.
Well, you also got a note from Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
Tracy says, "Oh my, OMG!" Many exclamation points. Thank you. Now see what you did there. You made a sister tear up. It's been a struggle. True, but yours and others' words of encouragement have kept me going. I'm on my way to swim class now as I type this, and I'm doing another 5K on Sunday. I actually walked 2 miles yesterday, and I worked out this morning. Wow. Dan, you know, and Bob, please do not...
We love you, Tracy. Whatever shape you're in, but I'm grateful that you're working on making the shape the way you want it to be.
Bingo. She says, when y'all are ready, it'll happen. It's just that simple. My rock bottom hit me when my size 20s threatened to file a restraining order against me if I tried to put them on again. I love you both, and I just hope you don't get to the point where your clothes are filing TROs against you, too. Yours on the journey to Wonderland. Wonderland is when your weight is under 200 pounds. Tracy's well on the way. I think Tracy's going to get to Wonderland before she knows it.
I think Tracy can do what Tracy wants.
Yep.
Tracy wants it, she'll do it.
So it may be a bit of an imposition on my part. Do you still happen to have your list of numbers?
Oh, the questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact I have them here because I brought them up just in case you asked that question. So
I had a blast with them last time, and we're running out of time.
Okay, well, let's not do the constitutional trivia this time.
Okay.
Pick a number between 1 and 23.
Hmm. 22.
Well, this is kind of facile, but maybe Barry Manilow, pro or con?
In the final analysis, I have to be pro.
Me too. Why?
Hell of a piano player. Longevity as an artist. And
here he puts on show.
Puts on a great show and learned how to put those shows on working with Bette Midler in the bathhouses.
That's right. And you know what? I mean, he does. When I was in sixth grade, I went through a huge Barry Manilow phase. Like he was my number one guy.
Yeah, I did too. I did too.
Yeah, because I wanted so bad to have a girlfriend, and there were certain girls that I just wanted to be that girlfriend, but I could never ever just like ask them out or ask them to a dance or ask them to dance.
No, because because your mouth would dry up, you'd become a trembling wreck without the benefit of prednisone.
Well, also I went to a really, really small, I lived in a small town and went to a really small school. So news traveled. And so the idea of like publicly failing, publicly being rejected by a girl, I could imagine nothing worse than going up and asking somebody to dance and saying no thank you, even if she said it nicely, it was like a failure to me. So I, and when all else failed, I just did nothing. I just stood by and watched it all happen. And yet Barry's music was all about that. Barry's music was about, I want to be with you. I love you, but I can't find the words, you know, or I'll never get to have you, or we just broke up and I really want you back. It was all of this kind of forlorn love.
Oh, when will I meet you? When will I touch you? When will this strong yearning end?
And even like, but also Barry had a really nice self-effacing sense of humor. He knew he was corny. He knew he was your mom's favorite pop act. And stuff like Copacabana. I mean, it's silly and stupid. He knew it was. But it was big. People wanted it. People enjoyed it. And he had terrific melodies. I like anybody that can make a good basic pop song. And I always say that when people deride pop music. It's like, you think it's so easy? You try it. You try to write a big hit pop song.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, and it's funny because you always get these little frames of reference. So first I hear Copacabana, and then a few years later, it's like I hear the grown up sort of Gulf and Western version of it when I hear Jimmy Buffett saying Cuban Crime of Passion.
Mm.
It's the same story.
Yeah. Neil Diamond, Barry Manilow, all those. I like those guys. I have no problem with that. You know, Air Supply kind of draw the line out.
See,
but on the other hand,
a minute ago, I was going to say, Barry Manilow does the same sort of schlock as Air Supply, but doesn't take himself as seriously as Air Supply does. Honest, my hand
That's
to God.
True. I'll tell you who I like. That's like more of what the kids are into these days. Because my kids are into. I really like Lizzo. Have you been listening to Lizzo at all?
No, but I'm going to now.
You know, she studied classical flute, and now she's a singer and rapper. She is a woman of color. And
I have not heard, but I have heard of. I heard Terry Gross interviewing her on Fresh Air.
I heard that same interview. I thought it was, I hate to say it, I thought it was one of the worst interviews I've heard Terry Gross have, because I thought Terry was really out of her element. And actually, Lizzo kind of called her on a few things where it was like, you're out of your depth, girl, sort of stuff.
Yeah, but no, she said, I found myself wondering if she had adequately prepared for the interview, because, you know, usually she's pretty prepared, but not, no.
Yeah, it was not Terry Gross's finest moment. But my kids listen to a lot of stuff, but that's one thing that like I caught early on. I was like, oh, you know, this is really appealing music. That's funny. She has a great sense of humor. You know, she's quite large, and on her album cover, she poses nude, but in a way that hides what you need to hide. But still, it's very unapologetic. This is who I am. I don't give a shit what you think of it. In her songs, she presents herself as a person that's fully capable of having a good, fun, healthy sex life and capable of rejecting somebody who can't fulfill her. It's like, good, you know? It's just funny, and it's just really great, great melodies, great pop melodies, and she can...
Melody is everything.
She does a flute solo, you know? She does a couple of flute solos. So it's like, yeah, I can get into this. So, yes, that's one of the... You know, the kids are into them, and I'm into them, too. There's others I kind of know, but I can't think of offhand, but I like that.
Well, I will check her out upon your stellar recommendation.
Oh, you know what? I'm working up for a future series for Facebook. I only just started it. I'm probably not put it out for a couple of months. I'm going to have a new series I'm calling Well, I Never, which is... I'm going to try things that I've never tried before. In pop, I'm not going to jump out of airplanes, but it's like a movie or an album or maybe even a TV show that I've never that have been immensely popular that for whatever reason I never saw. Like I've never seen Flashdance.
Oh,
cute. And I'm sure it's not Citizen Kane, but I should see what it was that, you know. It's probably fun. I've never listened to a Grateful Dead album all the way through.
that you can remember.
You know what? I say that, but have I ever really just? So I'm gonna listen to American Beauty from beginning to end.
Good call.
And I'm gonna write about it.
Good call. I was gonna say or Terrapin Station.
Yeah. Well, I did a little research, and it seems like that's probably the most accessible one for a neophyte like myself.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Terrapin Station and Oaxaca or whatever it is, those are a little more like out there, you know, a little more freewheeling.
I just love that you know the on and on and on lyric to Terrapin Station. I mean, it just. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll find out eventually.
Shall we do one more number in the remaining couple of minutes?
Yeah. Guess a number.
11.
11. If you were to go to hell, have I asked this one before? If you were to go to hell, what would be the one song that would play over and over and over for eternity?
You know, it's interesting that we talked about the REO Speedwagon song. It would either be the theme from Barney, or Bob Seger's "Turn the Page."
Wow, really? You know, I have a general dislike of songs about how hard it is on the road. You know, oh my God, really? You have to live in a hotel every night? And you have to go out and sing songs, the same songs over and over to an adoring crowd of thousands and get laid by groupies. Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. Sucks to be you. So bad.
Meanwhile, I'm going to go dig a ditch over here for my minimum wage. But yeah, Turn the Page is bad. My song, it's funny too, when you ask, like, what's your favorite movie? It's like, there's a part of you that's waiting. Okay, well, my favorite movie is this. But my song that plays in hell over and over is Kokomo by the Beach Boys. There's just something about that Bermuda, Bahama.
Because it's wrong! Kokomo's in goddamned Indiana.
Well, it also, it may just be because it's like, I like Brian Wilson, Beach Boys, right? Young and the genius Brian Wilson. And this is... that show up on Full House, and John Stamos is playing the drums. That's the Beach Boys of Kokomo.
Well, yeah,
and it's just,
true.
I also don't like the Four Seasons at all, and that might be another one of those well, I nevers where I just have to listen to like the Four Seasons. But I hate them. I hate these that like you know that high thing and Sherry Bay.
Get the goddamn mosquito spray! I'm taking this one out.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if I go to hell, it's a good
thing. There's a reason we're the friends that we are, because when we disagree, we do so agreeably. But my God, the agreements. Well, once it's been far too long, Dan, since we did this. So let's try not to put so much distance between this one and the next one.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of getting used to the work schedule. I'm not coming home exhausted as nearly as much as I was for a while. So I think I'll be able to get back into the rotation. Yeah, I think once a month is enough for me.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But it's been like months.
It's been months. That's right.
And there's your medication reminder.
There's my medication alarm. I'm going to turn it off. Thank you for having me on. It's 9 o'clock. Time to go. It's always a pleasure. It's fun. It's a form of therapy.
It's an absolute joy, and you are beloved in the Horn family community congregation, I can assure you.
Well, I love the Horn family, and what I'd love maybe the next time I come on, let's really try to whip up people to email in not just compliments, but, you know, just whatever. Let's try to make them maybe...
Oh, no, I had a couple, but a couple of them required me to run audio, and I have a sound card problem right now that is resisting a solution. So I can't even play my show intro right now.
Wow.
I had a link of Cartman Jack sent along a link of Cartman hating the Animaniacs.
Well, I know that we're past 9 o'clock, but I mean, all you have to do, I'm kind of late to the game for Animaniacs, but I listened to an interview with the guy that does the voice for a lot of them. And he sang have you ever heard that song where he lists every nation in the world?
Yes.
I mean, it's astounding.
It is worthy. It's worthy of the Warner Brothers studio at the zenith of its powers.
Yeah. It just goes on and on and on. He's going like Mexico, and just when you think he's done, he's not done. And it's like, wow, that's such a skill. They have one for presidents too. It's like, wow, they should make. For all I know, they do teach this in schools. They should. Just get Animaniacs in there. It's like seven.
Yeah, it's its own Schoolhouse Rock, and of course the other. I should know the guy's name. I don't. He's a genius. The guy who voiced the Brain. Who does a pitch perfect spot on Orson Welles?
Orson Welles, and he did the Frozen Peas commercial.
Yes,
that's for the next corn thing. Hey, maybe to go out, you want to sing the preamble, the Schoolhouse Rock preamble to the Constitution with me? You know that?
Oh God, I don't know.
The people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility. Provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. You're welcome, America. Good night.
Good night, Dan.
Good night, Cleveland. Dan Fisher loves you.
Dan Fisher has left the building. See you, Dan. The one and only Dan Fisher, happily celebrating his first birthday with his new heart. And many happy returns, my dear, dear friend. Thank you very kindly to Anatole for jumping in, and thanks to Ralphs. Gary and Gaia's challenge was met. We're done with fundraising for the month of September. Glory, hallelujah. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you to each and every one of you who share in your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever means you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky earlier in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.